From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Hurricane Lenny kills at least 7 people in the Caribbean. St. Martin has been pulverized. Also in the news, Ecuador carries out its threat to seek sanctions against the EU. I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Hurricane Lenny has left at least 7 people dead as it rampaged across the islands of the northeastern Caribbean. It's now got in its sights the Dutch Antillean island of St. Bart's, which is southeast of St. Martin. It has lost power down from a maximum strength hurricane at the height of its fury to a Category 1 today. The National Hurricane Center in Miami described it as wreaking havoc in St. Martin and on adjacent islands. Before the phone lines went down on St. Martin, one eyewitness said that Lenny was flinging shipping containers about like they were toys. The regional disaster relief agency, SEDERA, has been assessing damage, and their coordinator, Jeremy Collymore, joins me now. Mr. Collymore, we know that St. Martin is not a member of SEDERA, but help give us some idea of the damage that's been done there.
Well, we at SEDERA have been monitoring the amateur radio, and it is a policy of ours not to necessarily provide a public repetition of information collected through that medium.
But in other words, it's unverifiable.
Yes, we do have a sense that there's been widespread coastal impact, like many of the other areas in under our jurisdiction, and a lot of damage to roads, etc. The details, as you're quite aware, we do not have those, and I don't want to be able to contribute further to any speculation in that regard.
Okay, Mr. Collymore, stay with us, because we've also got live from Anguilla our reporter Wycliffe Richardson, who's been surveying the damage by helicopter and, in fact, has just got back. Wycliffe, how bad is it?
Yes, it is very bad in terms of flooding, especially in the portions of the island's capital, the valley, which at this time resembles a lake with over 14 inches of rain. There has been some trees uprooted, the roads damaged, of course, severe flooding. Fishing boats were destroyed. Also, animals and livestock were drowned. A retired U.S. citizen who has been resident in Anguilla for a number of years was found dead at his home. The island is still without electricity. Utility crews are carrying out initial assessment. The British West Indies frigate HMS Northumberland arrived around 2 o'clock this afternoon. As you said, I was with them with the reconnaissance survey. Crew members will be assisting police as well as locals in clearing block roads.
Okay, Wycliffe, any word from St. Martin and some of the islands that have been particularly badly hit, like St. Croix?
Well, we were able to monitor here by radio in St. Martin that a number of roofs had been blown off several buildings, including that of the University of St. Martin. And there was also damage to the government administration building in St. Martin. Roads were blocked, erosion and flooding, and some business places were also damaged.
Jeremy Collymore of SEDERA is still with us. Mr. Collymore, you said to me earlier that this is a new experience for you. How is that?
Well, when I say us, I mean the region, in the sense that, first of all, it is the first time that we are experiencing an event traveling such a large distance from west to east. And secondly, the almost uniform, extensive coastal damage right up the chain of islands in ports and that have hitherto been considered sheltered has raised new dimensions about the design criteria for some of the infrastructure on those traditionally sheltered ports.
And that is a subject, I hate to interrupt you at this point, but that is a subject we'll be touching on in a bit more detail later on. Let me ask you, though, does this necessarily complicate your disaster relief task?
Well, the issue before us now is not the traditional humanitarian response in the same scale that we have hitherto been operating. We've had some reflections on this, and we've been discussing it with our partners, and it seems that one of the critical response interventions will have to be the provision of some technical support to help the countries translate this coastal damage impact into technical documents that can inform the refinancing and reconstruction of the damaged infrastructure. And this is something that we are eagerly reviewing and seeking support for its implementation.
Jeremy Collymore at Sedera in Barbados and Wycliffe Richardson in Anguilla, thank you very much indeed. Earlier I spoke with Weber Herbert of Voice of Nevis Radio to get a picture of damage on that island and the others around it.
The Charlestown Harbour took a severe hit, and along that includes the Pinners Beach area, of course, where the famous Four Seasons is located. That is closed for the time being. So the 20-foot waves pounded that area in the Pinners Beach area, the Charlestown Port area. A couple of the houses from the Low Street Village fell into the sea.
Have you gotten word from the neighboring islands?
Yes, on St. Kitts, they have gotten some very heavy flood and mudslide damage. The Old Road area is very near the sea, and the sea has come up with 20-foot and more waves pounding houses in that area. One report to us that owner of a business there got his leg broken, and the Old Road Bay area is very, very bad indeed. So is, we're getting reports, Halfway Tree and Sandy Point area on St. Kitts. And the mudslides there have been heavy because they have been saturated already over the past couple of weeks where rain is concerned. We also got some reports from Montserrat as well, where they have been experiencing some mudslides. The path from block roads and so on, they have been faring pretty okay. And a couple of washed up boats. We've had a couple of washed up boats as well. That washed ashore off Sandy Point and St. Kitts. We understand that one crew member also fell overboard, still unaccounted for.
Broadcaster Weber Herbert in Nevis. Meanwhile, that country's Prime Minister, Denzel Douglas, was unable to travel back into Bastia because of the hurricane. He's stuck in St. Lucia for the moment. He told our reporter Pete Ninval that Lenny was proof of repeated warnings about the effects of global warming.
There is need for us to look at the practices of the industrialized developed world as they affect negatively the environment, and thus we feel in the effects here in this part of the world.
Are we blaming them, Doctor, for what
happened? Well, we have to blame them. We have to blame them because they are unscrupulous in many ways in their practices. The non-governmental organizations internationally, which have been making statements, they have not been taken seriously in the past, and that is why we cannot talk about a new round of discussions to lay the regulations and rules for international trade unless we also discuss the environmental practices of the industrialized world.
Dr. Denzel Douglas, so how justified is it to blame the richer countries and climate change for increasingly unpredictable weather? Well, a draft report by a team of international scientists warns that the effects of climate change could be even more unpredictable. The BBC has obtained a copy of that report. I discussed it with William Gray, a professor of atmospheric science at Colorado State University at Fort Collins.
Many of us do not agree with the statements coming out of there. They don't have a lot of the good experienced people on that panel. It was a highly politicized panel whose results were mostly written before the research was done.
Highly politicized in what way? How do you?
Well, they're pushing the human-induced global warming, and the data does not well support that. It's a politics. It's pure and simple politics. Intergovernmental panel. So many of us here in the States don't believe it at all, and whatever they say, particularly with regard to tropical storms, they're saying that we should have more intense tropical storms now because of the human-induced global change. Now,
let me get this right, Professor Gray. They are basically in the camp of the small developed nations that are accusing the U.S. and the big countries of causing much of the climatic change that are taking place at the moment. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know that they're made up of the small countries, because the big countries, England, your country, my country,
and I'm asking whether they're
Germany,
in the same camp, though.
They are agreeing with it, too. There is like our vice president, says that, you know, this is a very terrible global problem, this human putting in greenhouse gases, and that it's going to lead to global warming. Well, we've had a little global warming the last century, that's true, but in my view and many other views, it's just natural that it would have happened whether we had been putting out more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere through fossil fuel burning or not.
Professor William Gray, in more news about Lenny, a petrol shortage in Grenada is being blamed on the hurricane. Lorries were unable to offload their supplies at gas stations because high waves and rain caused by the hurricane destroyed the road over which they had to travel. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Confidential papers just released from the British Public Records Office show that a series of anthrax tests were carried out within a mile of the coast of St. Kitts in the 1950s. British scientists carried out a series of field trials with the deadly gas, and the records show they were badly organized. Kitticians know little or nothing of the tests. The BBC's Sancha Berg reports.
Grenada Island sheep were used for the trials because they're particularly sensitive to inhaled anthrax.
The most notorious of Britain's field trials of biological weapons, the island of Grunard was left contaminated for nearly 50 years. But though the dangers of such open-air anthrax tests were clear in the early 1940s, British scientists continued them after the war in the East Caribbean. Papers just released at the Public Record Office show the tests, codenamed Operation Harness, were a shambles. Alistair Hay is reader in chemical pathology at the University of Leeds.
The facilities that the individuals had for putting on their protective clothing were inadequate. The experiments, I think, proved to be a bit of a poor show.
One unnamed member of staff did get infected, presumably with anthrax. His fate is not described. Some of the papers remain classified. The response of the scientists was relief.
The fact that only one case of specific infection occurred, which was attributable to the operation, may be held sufficient to prove that the safety measures were adequate. And on the whole, this was probably true.
The original plan was to tow dinghies containing animals miles out to sea and spray or bomb them with anthrax there. But the sea was too rough. The experiments were moved closer to land, just a mile away from the capital of St. Kitts. There's no mention in the file of warnings issued to the local population. The writer, Carol Phillips, was born on the island, and he'd never heard of the experiment till now.
I shudder to think what might have happened if the tests had have gone wrong and the wind had have blown in the wrong direction. I mean, I think it's a very small island of 68 square miles with a population of about 35,000 people in that area. Given the contagious nature of anthrax, it could have been a disaster, perhaps on an unprecedented scale.
Carol Phillips ending that report by Sancho Berg. Ecuador has carried out its threat to formally ask for sanctions against the EU. They want the WTO's permission to impose $450 million worth of sanctions on the European Union. Claire Doolin in Geneva has the latest.
Ecuador, the world's biggest banana exporter, says it's no alternative but to threaten trade sanctions against the European Union. With an economy heavily dependent on banana exports, it says it can't stand by while the EU, one of the richest trading blocs in the world, inflicts further damage. Although the EU banana import regime has been ruled illegal, the EU's reform proposals have been dismissed by Latin American producers as inadequate. Under the proposals, it would continue to offer favourable terms to African and Caribbean countries until January 2006. Ecuador, along with other Latin American countries, argued the proposals would make them worse off than before. Ecuador says after waiting 7 years for the EU to stop restricting market access, its patience has run out. Its request for $450 million of compensation for lost trade has been referred to an arbitration panel. Within 60 days, it will rule on the request for sanctions. If Ecuador wins, it proposes a novel way of claiming compensation. Unlike the United States, who in a similar dispute imposed high tariffs on EU goods to price them out of the market, Ecuador would suspend copyright agreements with all EU members apart from Denmark and the Netherlands. Caribbean countries such as Jamaica and St. Lucia argue the EU's reform proposals are consistent with WTO trade rules and regret Ecuador's retaliatory action.
Claire Doole ending BBC Caribbean Report. Till next week, this is Orin Gordon saying goodbye.